as they inherit more and more wealth, which is this multi-trillion-dollar wealth transfer that's coming this decade, there's a lot of particularly financial advisors thinking, how do I position myself to talk about things like climate solutions to these type of clients?
Thanks for tuning into Capsule. This is Haley.
And this is Bochu. In each episode, we discuss the need to knows of impact investing with the help of CapShift's community. Today, we're joined by our very own Adam Ryan and Emma Kulo.
Adam is the CEO and co-founder of CapShift. He's had an extended career in all things climate investing. Before CapShift, he was a managing partner at climate investment firm Mission Point Partners. He also co-founded MIT-based startup Alteros, as well as Greentown Labs, the largest climate tech incubator in North America. And he's our boss.
Emma Kulo is an investor at Accelerate, an early-stage VC fund investing in climate change mitigation. Emma's background is in early-stage operations and strategy, and she was a founding team member here at CapShift, building the foundations of our work today. Welcome.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
I've been waiting for this all week.
As a way to introduce yourselves, can you each tell us about how you became interested in climate and kind of what brought you to where you are now?
Sure. My interest in climate was a little unexpected. It started back when I was in college a little over 20 years ago. And I was interested in trying something different. And I got a summer internship at the U.S. Embassy in London in the Environment and Energy Policy Department. It was a little bit by chance. And for the first thing, they sent me up to rural England to a nuclear waste facility where one of the U.S. congressmen was visiting to figure out how we could learn from our friends in the U.K. how to handle our nuclear waste. And that put me into a whirlwind tour on energy and environment and climate. Something called the Kyoto Protocol had just passed, kicking off the whole world of carbon offsets. I was captivated by the gigantic system that is our world that was changing, and I've been working around climate ever since.
Fascinating to think that was around the Kyoto Protocol time. That's, I don't want to...
No, essentially... I'm sure your elementary school graduation
I've been focused on climate since high school, and my entry point was when I read an article by Bill McKibben. It was one of his articles for the Rolling Stone, and he, I think, wrote a few of those talking about climate change, but I read one, and it kind of just floored me. I found it pretty kind of fundamentally terrifying. And I know I'm not here to say climate change is scary. People have all sorts of emotional reactions, but at the time, as like a sophomore in high school, I had thought that climate change was something, you know, maybe a century away, something for our grandchildren's time. And it kind of presented this as a far more immediate, pressing issue. And I walked around for a few days in kind of an existential daze. And that's when I really felt like my mission was to work on climate.
So how does someone who's interested in climate investing but doesn't know where to start, what are their first steps?
Generally, the most important thing is to figure out what's the motivation for thinking about climate investing. When we went out to put out our primer and surveyed our clients, we found there's three big buckets that weren't mutually exclusive. The first is around a lot of the things we're talking about is around people who really care about mitigating and trying to find big ways to reduce the causes of climate change. Those tend to be very focused on global systems changed and scalable solutions, and that's very common. The second are folks who really come first from a community lens and thinking oftentimes, oh, how is this volatile and chaotic and changing climate impacting the communities I care about, particularly low-income or disadvantaged communities, which disproportionately are hit with the impacts of climate change. And that, you know, that kind of resiliency and adaptation is now even a new wave of investable options and oftentimes is more focused on kind of localized capital, localized systems. The third approach is more purely financial, thinking how is this big trend going to impact my investment portfolio? Are there growth opportunities I should be taking advantage of, or are there risks I should be trying to minimize or be aware of? And I think with those, depending on those lenses, you're going to start in a different place. Naturally, most investors out there start with their public portfolios, and they're generally looking for funds that are going to align with the values they care about and potentially look at mitigating risks in the portfolio or disproportionately invest in parts of the market they may capture certain growth trends around climate. In the private markets, there's many places to start, but generally it's around looking at kind of lower risk and more liquid funds, which typically are in the private credit market. And so think about, can I invest in solar and wind energy projects that might be relatively mature, relatively safe, but I know my capital is going to actually build out some of this ecosystem. And then over time, people get more comfortable with catalytic investing or high-risk investing and things of that nature.
Adam, in terms of investors who may be interested in climate investing, can you paint a picture for us of a couple of profiles or personas of people who might be particularly drawn to the space?
Yeah, we've tried to do a little bit out of that with our client base. A lot of talk, if you think about in the private wealth industry and interest generally in impact or sustainability, the first mindset goes to next gen inheritors or millennial investors. This tends to be the segment that is most vocal about their passion and commitment to climate solutions and interest in impact. Has a smaller part of the wealth ecosystem, but as they inherit more and more wealth, which is this multi-trillion dollar wealth transfer that's coming this decade, there's a lot of particularly financial advisors thinking, how do I position myself to talk about things like climate solutions to these type of clients? What's surprising as we look at CapShift is that's not the largest climate client base that we have, even though it's probably the most talked about. Another big segment are really kind of wealth creators, which are oftentimes entrepreneurs, CEOs, people who are very active with their philanthropy or their wealth management, who are trying to, you know, blend their purpose and values into the way they think about wealth management and really are see climate day to day in their businesses that they made their wealth and want to actively, you know, address it in their investment portfolios. Similarly, a third segment would be financial service professionals themselves. People who may work for an investment, a traditional investment fund, may also be very keen to emerging trends in the investment sector, and for their own investment portfolio may want to diversify and tackle some of those challenges.
For both of you, what are some exciting solutions that you're seeing, some challenges that you think are like the most important ones being solved that you've been seeing, anything you're excited about?
Yeah, there's a ton to get excited about in the climate space. It's a super exciting sector. And, you know, what I find especially compelling is that climate investing isn't necessarily, you know, sector specific or one vertical. It's a lens that you apply across many investment verticals. So you can be working in climate and focused on agriculture, looking at carbon sequestration practices and regenerative farming. You can be in climate focused on heavy industry. So how do you produce, you know, traditional everyday chemicals without using fossil fuels, or how do you lower the carbon intensity of cement production? There's fashion intersecting with climate, and how do you make leather that feels the same but isn't made from animals or plastics? Or how do you recycle textiles at the end of life rather than throwing them into landfills? You know, there's buildings and their carbon footprint, and how do you lower the energy we need for heating and cooling, or replace gas-powered systems, or develop air conditioners that don't use refrigerants, which are very strong greenhouse gases if they leak into the atmosphere. So it's remarkably diverse, and there's many, many sectors I'm not even getting to here. So there's really something for everyone. And I'd say, you know, in terms of, I find all exciting, and also in terms of where I have especially strong enthusiasm is as a cheese enthusiast, I always love taking a look at the companies that are making ooey gooey cheese with the same texture and the same flavor notes, but making it with plants instead of animals.
Mm. Anytime you talk about food, you know, it's going to make us hungry here. One thing, you know, we've seen a new wave of investment funds that are very sector specific. And so we look not just at climate funds, but we look at oceans focused funds. We look at circular economy focused funds. We look at water focused funds. I think it really has allowed people who are passionate about one part of climate solutions to allocate capital where they want to. One area I've spent a lot of time on in my career is food waste as an investing ecosystem. And we started to see even more specific waves of solutions, such as companies taking the leftover produce on farms that aren't harvested and either reselling those direct to CSA style or upcycling those into new products, whether it's smoothies or new inputs into the food system. Another one is many people have had the experience of buying a delicious set of produce at the store, putting it in that produce drawer in your refrigerator, and then opening it 4 days later and seeing that mold start to grow. There's a number of companies building invisible coatings on produce made oftentimes of natural coating sources that will extend the shelf life of produce 2 to 3 times, which you think systemically is actually reducing a lot of waste, which is reducing the need to grow more food and reducing the water, the fertilizer, the pesticides, the fossil fuels going into unnecessary farm production.
And helping people's grocery bills when they're not rebuying produce all over and over again.
Feel free to hook me on that, though. It's like hairspray for your lettuce.
It's so appealing.
Yeah, that really hits the consumer. What's the consumer appetite?
In this conversation, public and private markets have come up. How do you think about those in terms of what someone who's interested in climate investing should be looking at when comparing and contrasting?
Well, I can speak towards private markets, and then I'll look to add up for publics because, you know, my focus is wholly on private markets. And I think one element to look at in terms of what are you investing in is a lot of the innovation of new technologies, high risk, potentially high impact technologies comes from really early stage private markets. You can see some at the corporate level and their R&D teams, but I think in terms of where are we incubating and growing novel solutions, I very much see early stage private markets playing a role there.
Adam, before you transition over to publics, which I do really want to hear about, I would love to hear a little bit from the investor's perspective as well. Why might an investor be particularly interested in the private markets and where, particularly from that perspective, you're hearing interest and where people are entering this conversation?
Sure. At Capshift, we put out a primer for investors on climate investing. And in that, we put out a framework which we call ABC, Align, Build, Catalyze, to address this very question. Most capital in the world and most of the carbon footprint in this world sits in public markets with large companies. And so the role of climate-focused public investing is very much around, in large diversified portfolios of lots of companies, how investors can align that portfolio around their values. And that could be a low carbon footprint alignment, or it could be a portfolio where they're actively engaging in shareholder engagement to change the practices of those companies to be more forward looking around climate change. At the same time, public markets, you know, where you can put more dollars to work and kind of address the biggest companies, those markets are liquid. And so your potential to actually innovate or scale with your dollars is harder. And so we look to the build and catalyze buckets of capital to tackle those other options. Building is very much focused on traditional market rate oriented private investing. And here we see, you know, solutions to climate change around all the private asset classes. So there's not only, we've talked a lot about venture capital funds, but now you have climate-focused private equity funds. You see hedge funds focused around climate solutions. You see real estate or sustainable forestry funds, as well as private credit or infrastructure project finance funds. So there's really the opportunity to put those dollars to work to scale up solutions. And Bocha, you asked, you know, why are investors focusing on private markets? You know, and particularly in the private wealth world, you've started to see, you know, the alternatives portion of this portfolio is growing year after year. It's very much looking at the opportunity for taking a different risk profile, potentially having a potential for higher rates of return and a different correlation than you'd find in traditional public, the kind of volatility or correlation, oftentimes giving up short-term liquidity in the pursuit of those sustainable long-term returns.
Something that has been in the news a lot recently is the term greenwashing as it relates to climate investments. Can you provide a definition, a short definition for our listeners of what greenwashing is and talk a little bit about how it shows up in your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think people have varying definitions of greenwashing, but the way I think about it is essentially a company or an entity recognizes that there's high value in building a brand around sustainability and environmentalism and seeks to capitalize on that value while having maybe a discrepancy between what their actions actually are. So, you know, messaging themselves or their initiatives is very green, sustainable, low carbon, while in reality, the actions that they're taking don't necessarily match up.
It's talking the talk without walking the walk.
That's Adam's far more succinct way to put it.
So I'm wondering what has been an aha moment for you or something that you experienced that you didn't expect in your journey?
When I started doing climate investing, I looked a lot at the historical climate investments. What were the investment memos behind those companies or funds? And how well were people, how good did they do in predicting what causes would lead to companies or funds succeeding or failing? I've read some research that backs this up. One of the big surprises is how much of the causes of success or failure were really due to timing around big market trends, even bigger sometimes than the strength of the product or the team behind it. We saw this a lot in that Cleantech 1.0 story, where you had so many really smart entrepreneurs with really great new solar products, but they couldn't compete with the large market trends around what was going on in China or things in the ecosystem. And we see this even now in some sectors around food and agriculture, where some of the competitive dynamics may come that one company might have a great product, but so much capital is flowing in that the sector gets oversaturated, raised to the bottom in costs, and no one of the companies can make money or succeed. And so I think keeping that lens, not just on, is this a good team with a good product, but what are these larger macro trends that might affect this subsector is a really important thing to think about, particularly in climate investing.
Yeah, that's a great point. I would say my aha moment was that, one of many, honestly, is that decarbonization is not just about carbon. It's also about other greenhouse gases as well. So when you say climate change, people usually think of carbon dioxide, and it's certainly an incredibly high concentration. It's a high emission source, but there are other greenhouse gases as well. And one that I've spent a lot of time on is methane, which has a 25 times higher global warming potential in a 100-year time frame, even higher if you look shorter. There's also nitrous oxide. So I think this kind of recognition that there's a suite of gases that are contributing, and they all come from different sources. So if you're looking at how do you reduce carbon dioxide emissions, those interventions can look different than how do you reduce methane emissions and how do you reduce nitrous oxide emissions.
Thanks for tuning into Capsule, Impact Investing in a Nutshell.
This podcast is brought to you by Capshift. Capshift brings impact investing solutions at scale to the world's largest financial, charitable, and corporate institutions. To learn more, visit us at capshift.com.
This episode was produced by yours truly with production assistance from Deanna Diaz. Sound design is by Riley Board.
A heads up, our goal is to provide insights, not to tell you how to invest. None of the speakers on today's episode were making an offer to invest in any products, and this conversation is not a recommendation of any products or services from Capshift. Please see the show notes for all important disclosures.
Until next time, this is Capsule.